Good morning.
Roto experts.
To the end zone.
The mark of fantasy excellence.
You have to be careful about who you think is stepping forward on the depth chart.
It's time for a touchdown.
You are now tuned in to the Roto Experts.
This is your time. Now go out there and take it.
Hello and welcome back to the Roto Experts Daily Podcast right here on demand on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. I am Scott Engel, the Managing Director of RotoExperts.com. I am the king. I am fantasy here with you every day as part of the new RotoExperts daily podcast that we have here. I'll be talking fantasy football very often, as you now realize as you go to RotoExperts.com. We are now fantasy football 365 days per year. For those of you who demanded it and those of you who wanted it, we now do all football at rotoexperts.com. Make sure you check it out. Great stuff from Davis Maddock that you can check out right now on the site as he gets you ready for Super Bowl 53 with his previews of the pass defenses and the pass offenses, comparing both of them. And you can check out the latest RotoExperts.com Top 100. We are nearing the end of our countdown of the Top 100 for 2018, and you can check out the latest right now on RotoExperts.com. And every day on the Fantasy Football Frenzy, they will reveal the latest 10. Right now on RotoExperts.com, we're at numbers 30 to 21, and we'll discuss that in a minute. And but for those of you who play fantasy baseball, don't fret. I will still be talking a lot of fantasy baseball on this show and also directing you to some great websites to get your fantasy baseball rankings, cheat sheets, analysis, etc. I certainly recommend the Fantasy Baseball Professional Guide by RotoMan if you are looking for a really good fantasy baseball magazine. I have mine already. And the thing I really like about it is the player capsules are very comprehensive and also include a lot of expert skinnies for every player, sleepers, busts, picks, pans, etc., comprehensive mock draft, and a lot of strategy articles from some of the top experts in the industry. So that's what I personally use. So that's what I personally recommend. But magazines are, to a lot of people, are a thing of the past because we're so much used to the internet. So that there's some great sites out there to get your information from, such as Masters Ball with my friend Todd Zola. Great cheat sheets and player ranks and information, etc. And RonChandler.com, if you're looking for really an advanced analysis and you're a high-level fantasy baseball player, RonChandler.com is also a great destination to go as well. League Management, you know, there's a few sites out there that you got. RT Sports is pretty good. FanTrax is pretty good. Of course, you have ESPN, CBS, and all the major players. But if you got any fantasy baseball questions, you can always hit me up on at @ScottyRotoX on Twitter. Less than 2 weeks before pitchers and catchers report. Right now, we're getting very, very close. A lot of people getting excited, but not everybody plays fantasy football, and they want to think about the NFL 365 days a year. We still got We still have one more day of fantasy football left officially. If you count the Super Bowl, tomorrow I'll be going over some DraftKings showdown strategies and some of my favorite picks for Super Bowl 53. If you go to Daily Roto right now, there's a great article about there about how they ran a series of simulations to come up with the best projected lineup selection. So you make sure you check that out. I believe they ran hundreds of simulations there, and I'll have more about that tomorrow. But like I said, the top 100 of fantasy football players of 2018, this afternoon on the Fantasy Football Frenzy, they'll be announcing players 20 through 11. And then on Friday, comprehensively, they will announce the top 10 fantasy football players of the 2018 season. So make sure you don't miss that. Right now on the site, 30 to 21 is available. And number 30 is Kareem Hunt. And there's a lot of speculation about where he might land and how many games he's going to play. Now, I hear people really on this network that I really, really respect talk about how many games they think Kareem Hunt is going to miss and how the situation is going to play out. They seem to be taking educated guesses on this. And that's a lot what we do in this fantasy industry. We take a lot of educated guesses. But I think when you went to, I heard Jim Day, who I have a lot of respect for and is a good friend, yesterday basically talking about what he thought his scouting report was for Kareem Hunt, that he thinks he's going to miss about 6 to 8 games, that he doesn't think he's going to get suspended for a year, etc. I think even the best analysts like Jim, I don't think anybody knows for sure here. Nobody knows what the league thinks. Let's not try to waste our time speculating on what the league is going to do and how many games Kareem Hunt is going to miss. We don't know if he's going to get suspended for 4 games or if he's going to get suspended for a full season. We've been down this road before with suspensions. We remember with Ezekiel Elliott, etc. We've been down this road with trying to guess players and what are they going to return with, like Le'Veon Bell. But when it comes to the league, to try to guess how many games a guy is going to be disciplined for, it's really a wasted effort. I think we should have learned our lesson from the Ezekiel Elliott mess, that nobody knows for sure what the league is going to do in any given situation. I think they look at any given situation, every individual situation separately. There's video of this, so they could choose to suspend him 10, 12 games. I don't think anybody knows for sure. I think anybody that's trying to guess about how many games Kareem Hunt is going to miss is throwing darts. Only inside certain offices behind closed doors at Park Avenue in Manhattan at the NFL offices do they know what's going to happen for sure. I don't think any of us can really guess. And when you look at Kareem Hunt in Dynasty and Keeper Leagues, you don't know what to do right now. You really don't. Fortunately for a lot of Keeper Leaguers, their deadlines are closer to the draft. So, we're going to have to wait for a ruling on this. There's been talk that the Eagles are after Kareem Hunt and that, they might be a team in the picture. They might be a prominent player, but look, if Kareem Hunt, misses half a season, what kind of condition is he going to be in? What kind of playing condition? Even if he's allowed to play in the preseason and training camp, Kareem Hunt, I've already gotten some keeper questions and they've involved Kareem Hunt. And if it's a close decision between him and another player, I always say, keep the other player because you just don't know what Kareem Hunt's future is going to be. The Philadelphia Eagles, they have to address their backfield. But, we don't know what's going to happen there. Doug Peterson likes the committee. Maybe he can come up with a combination of, say, Tevin Coleman and Latavius Murray in free agency. But that might be too much. This team is, bottom three in the salary cap right now. So we'll have to see. Do they slap something together or do they go after guys like Mark Ingram? But with Kareem Hunt, you just don't know. And I think if anybody's guessing, how many games or they have an educated guess, honestly, as much as I respect those guys, I disagree with them. You can't sit here and guess how many games Kareem Hunt is going to miss. No one knows for sure. Don't waste your time. Don't waste your time making a guess. I think you just have to play wait and see when it comes to Kareem Hunt. Nobody knows for sure. I'm certainly not going to sit here and pretend that I know how many games Kareem Hunt is going to miss in 2019. I keep getting the year wrong. I hear people doing that. I was watching a TV show yesterday. People kept saying it was 2018, but it was obviously 2019. Number 29 of the top 100 is really interesting. And Nick Chubb, this year he finishes RB17 with 996 yards, 8 touchdowns, 20 receptions for 149 yards, and 2 touchdowns. And really did a lot of his work in the second half of the season when Carlos Hyde was traded after week 7. The Browns made a lot of changes, bringing in Freddie Kitchens as offensive coordinator. And all of a sudden, Nick Chubb started playing like a top 10 running back. And I think there are disagreements about where Nick Chubb goes next year in drafts. Is he a first-round pick or is he not? And I think a lot of the critics point to the fact that Nick Chubb really doesn't catch passes out of the backfield. And, you know, that's always a downer that a lot of people will point out when looking at the top fantasy running backs. If a guy doesn't catch a lot of passes, a lot of the experts just don't seem to regard him as highly. But Nick Chubb, scoring 8 touchdowns in basically half a season, you know, what can he do over a full season? You know, this guy could score like 14 rushing touchdowns. He could rush for 1,300 yards. And, you know, that's something I think you have to consider towards the end of the first round or back of the second. You know, looking at my early running back ranks on rotoexperts.com, which I'm getting ready for release in February as part of our NFL 365 project and coverage. Here's an early look of where Nick Chubb falls in my running back ranks. Saquon Barkley, number 1. Ezekiel Elliott, number 2. Todd Gurley, number 3. Christian McCaffrey, number 4. And I'm having a hard time trying to decide between Gurley and McCaffrey there. Alvin Kamara, number 5. Melvin Gordon, number 6. James Conner, number 7. Le'Veon Bell, number 8. And then it comes down to Joe Mixon and Nick Chubb at 9 and 10. And I put Mixon ahead because I feel like he's more versatile. And David Johnson just doesn't have the upside. So I'm really comfortable putting Nick Chubb at number 10 overall. So then you figure a few wide receivers in the first round. You know, that makes Nick Chubb just what I said. Towards the end of the first round, early second, off the board. I think you'll see that in a lot of drafts. And be a great best ball pick because, you know, this guy can easily run for over 1,250 yards and score double-digit touchdowns. Sometimes, and like I said, people will always criticize saying a guy doesn't catch passes. But when a running back is so effective as a runner, he can sort of overcome that. If the rushing numbers are so good that a guy is rushing for like 1,300 yards and a dozen touchdowns, which, well, why doesn't Nick Chubb have that sort of upside? You know, that's better than some other running backs that catch a lot of passes. The running numbers will be so good that the lack of receptions will compensate. He'll compensate with rushing numbers that are so outstanding that the final total is really going to put him among the top guys in the position. Nick Chubb, the way he looked this year, I can project him for 1,300 yards and 12 touchdowns, and I'll take that in the first round anytime. But, you know, a lot of the guys ahead of him are more versatile. You look at Barkley, he's the most versatile dual threat in the league. Heading into next year, Ezekiel Elliott had a career year in terms of touchdown passes. Todd Gurley, we've seen what he can do. Christian McCaffrey, you know, wait till you see where he ends up on this overall list. We already know what Alvin Kamara can do versatility-wise, and a ton of his production comes as a receiver. Melvin Gordon has improved as a receiver. We've seen what James Conner can do. We know what Le'Veon Bell can do. And we see the potential from Joe Mixon as a pass receiver. But I think Nick Chubb is kind of like, you know, when you go to the supermarket and, you know, you check it out with your groceries and you have a divider. I see Nick Chubb as a divider between those top nine running backs that can catch passes and really the next overall tier, if you will. I think there's a fall off after Nick Chubb of guys who I can't quite feel comfortable as my number one running back. Any of those top 10 that I have right now, Barkley, Elliott, Gurley, McCaffrey, Kamara, Gordon, Connor, Bell, Mixon, and Chubb, I would feel very, very comfortable with them as my RB1 going into next year. I would have total peace of mind. Whereas from 11 on, I have a little bit of question marks, like David Johnson. What's the Arizona offense going to look like? Philip Lindsay had a great rookie season, but and technically he falls as an RB1 by ranking as number 12, and he played like an RB1 for this year. But you know, just look, nothing logical, but I worry that Philip Lindsay, that I hope that he wasn't a one-year wonder because the guy doesn't have a pedigree and he came out of nowhere to do this. And when defenses watch film on him all offseason, you know, can Philip Lindsay really do this again? I can't guarantee that he will. So with Philip Lindsay, I think I worry a little bit. Not that I really think that Philip Lindsay is a guy that look, he came out of nowhere and was the biggest story of 2018 in terms of coming out of nowhere and taking a job and, you know, just really starting the fantasy world. But still, you know, the guy had no pedigree coming out of college. You know, can this kid do it again? I saw him kind of wear down the stretch and not play well in the fantasy playoffs. Look, I like Philip Lindsay a lot, and I'll probably take him in the second round next year when he probably goes, or maybe even the third. Some early drafts I've seen him vacillate between the second and the third. But I think there's a general feeling out there with Philip Lindsay, and it really doesn't stick to any logic when you look at the numbers, except for down the stretch. Is that, look, that Philip Lindsay is a guy that came out of nowhere. Can he do it again? So that's why he just doesn't quite fall in my top 10. Look, there's nothing logical to base it on. Just call it a gut feeling. This guy was a great story, but I'd like to see him be proven a little bit more. And then he got Damian Williams in number 13. The guy played great, but, you know, can Damian Williams do this over a full season? We've never really seen it. So, you know, that's why Nick Chubb is really the marker between, you know, the guys that I feel comfortable with and the guys that I just feel a little less comfortable with. But I think if you really go with any of those top 10, you're really good. And, you know, I said David Johnson at 11, Philip Lindsay at 12, I go back and forth there. It really depends on what happens with the Cardinals in the offseason and how they look in the preseason as well. And with Philip Lindsay also, what's going to happen to the quarterback situation in Denver? Because if they have Case Keenum there again, I think it does affect Philip Lindsay. Because what are we going to get from Royce Freeman in year two? You know, that's another big consideration there. So look, with Philip Lindsay, I think he's got to worry about Royce Freeman. Royce Freeman has been very, 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 very disappointing in the next year, and I think that's the biggest logical thing that, if anything, would have really cut to the Philip Lindsay outlook. Is Royce Freeman going to get better in year two, and how much will that cut into Philip Lindsay's production? So that's something we'll have to wait and see on. But the Browns, they're going to be a very interesting team next year. you look at Baker Mayfield, and the production was kind of inconsistent. But, you know, there was a lot of hope that he gave fantasy owners down the stretch. I actually used him in one fantasy Super Bowl over Jared Goff, who wasn't playing well. And Baker Mayfield really, really delivered. So, you know, is that a guy that could be a QB1 next year? I think he certainly has the potential. One of the most impressive rookies I've seen in recent years. You know, you look at week 12, he had 4 touchdown passes. Week 13, he had 1. Week 14, he had 1. Week 15, he had 2. But then week 16, he had 3. So there was inconsistency from Baker Mayfield. But there was also a lot of promise. I really think, and I've said it on this show before, that I think the Browns need one more pass catcher to really make a difference in their offense. Jarvis Landry was very disappointing, but can still be an excellent move the chains guy. You know, this is a team that really needs to maybe hit free agency and go after another big target here or prominent pass catcher. I don't think Golden Tate would be the answer because they already have a guy like Jarvis Landry. If the Steelers trade Antonio Brown, it's not going to be within the same division. You know, maybe a Dante Moncrief, you know, might be a nice fit for a team like the Cleveland Browns, because I think if Moncrief goes somewhere else outside of Jacksonville and he is a free agent, that his numbers could be even better. So Dante Moncrief, I think, is a nice off-season sort of sleeper value type. And for those of you who read RotoX on RotoExperts.com, my value running backs for the offseason, I really appreciate it. I'm going to have wide receivers coming up very soon, and he's going to be one of them. So also looking at some of the other guys from the top 100 as well. Moving on, Eric Ebron is tight end 28. I think there's a lot of speculation going into next season that you, with the return of Jack Doyle, that you're just not going to see the kind of production that you did last year in terms of touchdowns. James White, number 27. I think we're all expecting him to be a big part of what we saw, what we're going to see in Super Bowl 53 here. As the game plan a lot of us analysts are talking about with that Rams defensive line, that Tom Brady's going to need to get rid of the ball quickly, and he's going to have to get it to the likes of James White. Well, what kind of role will James White have next year? I think it really depends on what the Patriots do in the offseason. They really, you know, they've been using James White as their top pass receiver, but that's the ultimately thing, I think, something that they don't want to do. They don't want to have to depend on him to catch more than, you know, 6-7 balls in a game, ideally, although they know he can do it. But, you know, this team's going to have to go out and get another piece in the pass catching game, especially if Rob Gronkowski retires. Number 26, Keenan Allen, was kind of disappointing this year. The overall numbers look pretty good, 97 receptions, 1,196 yards, but only 6 touchdowns. It was kind of a drop-off from last year, from almost 1,400 yards to under 1,200 yards. Was not the elite fantasy wide receiver that you expected every week. I really think Keenan Allen is more of a wide receiver 2 than a wide receiver 1 heading into next season. That's sort of where I'm looking with Keenan Allen as we look ahead to 2019. A guy that I'd love to get is my wide receiver 2 in the 3rd round, but I just wouldn't feel comfortable with him as my wide receiver 1. And some people are going to still draft him as a wide receiver 1 based on reputation more than anything else. Number 25, Mike Evans. 86 catches, 1,524 yards, 8 touchdowns. With Jameis Winston being more consistent next season, I think he'd have another big year. Number 24 is Joe Mixon. I already talked a lot about where Mixon ranked for me, number 9, going into next year. healthy Andy Dalton can only help. Number 23, T.Y. Hilton, 76 catches, 1,270 yards, and 6 touchdowns. Played really, really well down the stretch, but has never been a big touchdown maker. You know, that's the one thing you have to remember when comparing T.Y. Hilton to some of the other elite wide receivers. Number 22, Stephon Diggs. And number 21, Robert Woods, who will also play in Super Bowl 53. And, you know, Robert Woods, terrific route runner. You know, look at the guys that the Buffalo Bills have lost, Sammy Watkins and Robert Woods. But so interesting to me when the Bills had Sammy Watkins and Robert Woods, we said, oh, you really can't depend on any of the wide receivers. Watkins always gets hurt. They have no wide receivers. Robert Woods leaves town, and look, all of a sudden he becomes one of the best fantasy football wide receivers. I think he's top 10 heading into next year. We did an early Roto Experts mock draft, and I didn't wait for wide receiver till the third round. And I took Travis Kelce in the second round, and Kelce can pretty much operate as my wide receiver one. But when some of the other top guys are off the board, I said, look, you know, I'm going to take Robert Woods as my wide receiver one, and I was very comfortable with it. But Cooper Kupp's going to come back next year. You know, that passing game is going to be very, very diverse. I would love to see the Rams in Super Bowl 53 play with Cooper Kupp, and, you know, just seeing that, you know, that the Patriots would have to account for him too. Jared Goff didn't play as consistently when he lost Cooper Kupp. And, you know, since week 12, the numbers have been very, very up and down. I think you give Jared Goff a lot of credit for that winning drive in the NFC Championship game. But I still feel like the Patriots believe that maybe their best chances of winning this ball game is to stop the ground game with the Rams and put it in the hands of Cooper Kupp, who has just not been quite as comfortable. Put it in the hands of Jared Goff, who has just been not quite as comfortable overall with Cooper Kupp, without Cooper Kupp. He's got Woods, he's got Cooks, he's got Reynolds, but I believe you see the best of Jared Goff when he has Cooper Kupp. So he's without his top weapon this week. I don't know if people are talking about that enough, you know, when they look at the Los Angeles Rams. They are going into this game without Jared Goff's favorite wide receiver. And that'll be something for Jared Goff to overcome on the big stage. You know, it's been quite an evolution of him, you know, trying to compensate without Cooper Kupp since the Rams' bye week. You know, if you look at the numbers, they've been very, very up and down. He did perform very well in week 16. The overall totals haven't blown you away in the playoffs, but he's made the plays when he's had to. But if he had Cooper Kupp, I would like Jared Goff even more as a DFS pick, like a showdown pick. So, you know, I think there's a challenge for Cooper Kupp in the Super Bowl not to have his best receiver. And it's going to be something for him to overcome. You know, I've heard a lot of analysts say that Belichick takes away the opponent's best weapon, and they feel it's Brandon Cooks. I don't know if I agree with that necessarily. With Sean McVay saying that Todd Gurley is going to have a bigger role, we'll have to wait and see what that bigger role necessarily is. They might want to take away the running game instead of the passing game. Because C.J. Anderson has certainly played well enough overall, where if it's a combination of Anderson and Gurley, you know, that's a threat that the Patriots have to take very, very seriously. So they may elect to stop the run rather than pass because they could have Stephen Gilmore cover a top receiver straight up and then, you know, double up on the other wide receiver with safety help. And the rest of the team could really focus on stopping the run. And then if Jared Goff's top wide receivers are blanketed by Stephen Gilmore and double coverage, and the Patriots are really focusing on stopping Gurley and C.J. Anderson, to me, that's a good defensive game plan that I think Belichick might be considering. A lot of people are saying, oh, they got to stop Brandon Cooks. That's their top target. You know, that's their biggest offensive weapon because They started to write Gurley off a little bit because of his health, because of the knee, and how sporadically he played in the NFC Championship game. But, yeah, the Patriots might elect to load up against the run more than anything else. And if they do, it's going to be a challenge for Jared Goff against that pass defense, I believe. Now, all year long, Jared Goff, when he's seen extra men in the box, he's checked out of it. But, you know, this is New England he's playing against. And, you know, it's not just about the personnel that's out there. New England's very confident in their personnel. But what coverages are they going to come out against Goff? It's going to be very interesting to see the game plan that Bill Belichick is going to design to basically take Jared Goff off his game. Let's remember that Goff is not a rookie, but he's only a third-year quarterback here. And he's facing Bill Belichick on the big stage without his best weapon. So I'm a little worried about Jared Goff here. The Patriots, they have the coaching and they have the personnel to basically stop the running game and still make Jared Goff uncomfortable. So I'm kind of worried about that. And to me, that's the X factor that's really going to decide Super Bowl 53, whether Jared Goff can make plays or not match Tom Brady. And I just don't know if he can. I don't know if Jared Goff is quite ready for this. You know, Jared Goff, fantasy-wise, he finished as quarterback 9 overall, but he was not good during the fantasy playoffs. His numbers have been ho-hum during the NFL playoffs. I think the Patriots are going to put Jared Goff in a position where he's going to have to carry the offense. And on the big stage, can he do that? If he makes mistakes early or they sputter early and they get behind, you know, it might be hard for them to get out of a hole against the Patriots here. So I'll have more on Super Bowl 53 tomorrow, including my DraftKings showdown picks as well. And but let's move on to some baseball talk here, as it looks like the Arizona Diamondbacks have signed Greg Holland to a one-year contract. And here the Diamondbacks go playing the cheap route again at the closer. We've seen them do it before with Brad Boxberger, with Fernando Rodney in recent seasons. Holland was absolutely awful in Washington last year when he was healthy, but he battled a lot of injuries. I'm sorry, when he was at St. Louis early in the year. And then he started to show more of his past form late in the season with the Washington Nationals, giving some hope that, you know, maybe that he can be a closer in 2019. And I think that's what the Diamondbacks are actually taking a flyer on. You know, can this guy come back and, you know, show what he did in 2017 and 2015 and late last season? I guess they like what they see enough to take a chance on it. They decided to non-tender Brad Boxberger, who lost a job last year. They also have Archie Bradley in the mix. So I think we're going to have to wait and see what happens here in spring training. I wouldn't be buying on anything with Holland here. Bradley has been talked about forever as a guy that maybe can do the job here. I think it could end up being a battle between Holland and Bradley in spring training, because I just don't know what you're going to get out of Holland after what you saw with him last year. And now Brad Boxberger is floating out there as a free agent closer. Is this a guy that the Red Sox take a chance on? You know, Seattle's no longer a landing spot because they have Hunter Strickland. But one of the big stories right now is that the Red Sox, very close to spring training, don't have a closer right now. And I guess if spring training was open today, Barnes would probably be the guy. We talked so much about how Machado and Bryce Harper are unsigned, but what about what about Craig Kimbrel? Yeah, that's a big name that's still floating out there. And will the Red Sox go to re-sign him? You know, there's some talks that maybe they do the unexpected and re-sign Kimbrel, because, you know, I've seen a lot of people saying that you know, Kimbrel's a goner and the Red Sox won't bring him back, but he's still floating out there. There's a big need. The Red Sox have seen a lot of possible closers that are cheaper than Kimbrel go unsigned. But, you know, is this going to be a situation sort of where Kimbrel's still going to float out there. He's not going to have a team. The Red Sox are going to keep waiting. And then ultimately, Kimbrel's going to come back and sign with the Red Sox for less than he wanted, less than he expected on the free agent market. You know, maybe the Red Sox end up looking real smart here by waiting this thing out and then getting Kimbrel back. But Boxberger's a name I think they have to consider, although he's very, very inconsistent. But for a team that just won the World Series and has the designs on going probably going to another, they really have to fix this closer situation. As we head to fantasy baseball drafts, a lot of these closer situations seem to be settled, but the Boston one is certainly a big one for us to watch. People often ask me, you know, what are my closer strategies? I like to have at least two, but ideally three closers. I don't spend a lot of draft capital on closers. What I'll usually do in the draft is I'll spend up big maybe for one top or moderately for one top 10 closer. Then I'll get another guy who's sort of in the middle, and then I'll take a flyer or two because I found a lot of my closers on free agency. That's what I save a good chunk of my fab for is going after closers. And, you know, that's what I'm going to do again this year. I have Tout Wars coming up again, and I'll be in the mixed auction. And I'll probably spend up nicely for one closer. I'm not going to spend probably over $25 for a closer, but I'll spend over $20 for, say, one guy. Then I'll get another guy that maybe is in, like, the 13, 14 sort of range. And then I'll get maybe, one or two guys that are probably $3 or under that I want to take flyers on, and I'll work the free agent list to get my closers. So that's what I'm going to do. But there's one name out there that I think teams are considering that might be very interesting in Boston is Bud Norris. Bud Norris eventually lost a job in St. Louis, but we've seen him be very, very effective for long stretches. So, you know, that's another guy that's out there. If Bud Norris were to end up in Boston, I'd see that as a very curious move there. I really believe, Norris got a little bit worn down at one point. But he showed that he certainly has the mentality and the stuff to do the job. Bud Norris was never a great fantasy pitcher as a starter. But when he converted to the bullpen 2 years ago, you know, we saw that he could get saves. To me, closers are like kickers. They perform very, very well for long stretches, and then they fall apart all of a sudden. But I've also seen them come back. I think Bud Norris is a very, very interesting name to watch right now as we get closer to spring training. You know, and for the teams that are still out there looking for a closer, right now Boxberger and Norris are probably two of the biggest names. And I like Norris if he ends up in the right spot. But lots more baseball talk coming and more fantasy football talk coming. And we'll see you on Friday on the Roto Experts in the Morning, the Roto Experts daily podcast every day here on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.